You are listening to the INCJ podcast, conversations about international criminal justice.
Thanks, Rob, for inviting us to have a little chat about women in forensic science. My name's Emma Johnston, and I'm a senior lecturer in forensic biology at Montfort University, and this is my colleague Alicia.
Hi everyone, my name's Alicia Nichols-Drew. I work with Emma in the forensic science team here at De Montfort University.
Yeah, and we thought maybe we'd start off by just talking a little bit about how we, you know, came to work in forensic science. And it's quite interesting when Rob said the kind of the topic of the news desk series that about, you know, women in the criminal justice system. We were thinking about women in forensic science, and forensic science is quite interesting because, you know, if you think of it as a science subject, a STEM subject, actually women are really well represented in the workforce. So we'll maybe talk a little bit about that. But first of all, I can just sort of explain that, I mean, I studied biology at university, and then I did a master's in forensic science. And then I worked for probably about 8 or 9 years with an organization called LGC Forensics. So for people who don't know, in the UK now, forensic science is it's a private enterprise. There's private labs who do that work and have contracts with police forces. So LGC Forensics at the time was one of the largest forensic science providers in the UK. And I worked there in their scene of crime DNA team. So that was examining items that were sent in from crime scenes to try and recover DNA from them, and then process those samples through the lab to try and generate a DNA profile. And later on, I had a job where I was interpreting the results, writing statements, and presenting DNA evidence in court. I then worked on a really interesting project in Guatemala for 2 years, where we were using fundamentally the same scientific techniques and DNA, but on a different project to identify individuals who had died during the period of armed conflict in Guatemala. The worst years being during the 1980s. So that was, as I say, similar scientific techniques, but a very different sort of context or setting. And then when I came back to the UK, I got this job at De Montfort University. We spend a lot of our time teaching forensic science to our students, but also doing research. I've recently completed my PhD on the topic of the role of forensic science in identifying missing migrants in Europe. And now I'm involved in another research project as well, looking at sort of trust and perception of forensic science evidence. Lise, did you want to say a bit about your background?
Yeah, so similarly to my background is in practice as well. So I started in 2000, the year I graduated, and like Em, we both have like a biology type background. I studied biomedicine at university. There weren't really that many forensic science courses back then, and I didn't really know that's the sort of career I wanted to get into. I always had a love of biology and medicine and an interest really in the law, and I never really thought about it, but I think forensic science links all of those together. So when I graduated in 2000, I went to work for the FSS, and that's the Forensic Science Service Laboratory of the Home Office, and they were regional labs around the country. And like Em already said, and now in the UK we have these privatised laboratories. It's a little bit of a different model in Scotland. So I worked there until 2012. And then I went to part of my role at the FSS would be examining exhibits that have been recovered from crime scenes. They're submitted to the lab, and we tend to work on burglaries and armed robberies and sexual offence investigations, homicide, terrorism-related investigations. And it was a really varied type of role because, although, as I said, my background's biology, I would be involved in recovering all different types of evidence, so particulates such as glass and paint, maybe looking at marks such as footwear marks, and looking at strategy of how, you know, what may have occurred on the case and what we will do in the lab to assist the questions from the investigators. And We used to also have cases come from overseas, so come to the UK if we could assist on them. And after the FSS, I got involved in training people in police. That was part of my role at the FSS, and gradually got into academia. And along the way, I've worked in another organisation similarly to M. This one was called Cellmark Forensic Services. So a privatised laboratory involved in the examination of exhibits from crime scenes. It's a varied type of role being a forensic scientist. Although you're mainly based in a laboratory, sometimes you might be requested to go to court or assist the search at scenes, especially where using some of our chemical techniques and looking at evidence such as blood stain pattern analysis. So it's really varied. And gradually I came to work here and joined Em in the team, in the forensic science team at De Montfort University. And we teach on all 3 years of our undergrad programme, although we are developing a MSci programme. And like Em, I'm not far ahead as Em, but I'm coming to the end of my PhD part-time and on finger mark evidence. So not my background, but it's been an interesting process as well as a challenging one. But also really passionate about knife crime research and how we can have an alternative outlook and try and prevent it as well as detect it, but try and stop it from happening in the first place. So we've both had like a varied and really interesting career journey to get here.
Yeah, and it's nice that it's maybe, I don't know, like within the team, we've got a mixture of colleagues, some who've taken the kind of pure academic route, but both of us have taken this more sort of, I guess, academic journey and got that, you know, experience from forensic science in the real world. But we definitely see it in our student cohorts, don't we, that every year the students on the programme are probably, I don't know a number off the top of my head, but maybe like 75% or even more is female students, isn't it?
Which
is quite unusual for a STEM subject.
Yeah, because normally you'd think of STEM being your science, technology, engineering and maths. You'd normally think of that as being heavily male orientated. But our student cohort seems to reflect practice. And I think from our experiences, that's what we've seen. You know, there are lots of women in forensic science. And traditionally, that probably wasn't the case. But I think more women in general seem to be entering policing and the criminal justice system. And it's really nice to think that there are role models out there who have influenced us and inspired us to come into this really brilliant career, really, you know, subject, and the experiences we've had have been really varied. And I think it's the case that, you know, when we set out in our career in the lab, we probably didn't think we'd end up in academia, but along the way we've got a wealth of different experiences in life that have enriched our career. And so it's a brilliant subject to be involved in, and every day is completely different.
Yeah, that's great. And I think I don't know that anyone's like really got to the bottom of why, you know, there might be more, you know, women in forensic science. I was, you know, doing a little bit of reading before thinking we were going to, you know, have this conversation. And I saw some things that suggested, you know, maybe it's because it's seen as it's more of a kind of, you know, a helping profession, and women are sometimes kind of, you know, socialized to be more caring and that kind of thing. It might appeal to more women that way, or that, you know, it's an approach to STEM where it's actually kind of connected to real life issues somehow might be appealing. But I think as well, as it sort of, you know, goes on, and there are increasing numbers, like you say, probably back when the FSS started, there weren't very many women. But now that there's, you know, becoming more and more, like you say, we've got loads of, you know, role models that we can look up to. And I think that perhaps, you know, helps younger people, you know, younger women think, oh yeah, maybe that's something that I could do.
Definitely. And I do think it is our subject sector, it has a supportive ethos, and we've seen that since the COVID pandemic, and I imagine other subject areas have as well, but even before that, I would say, you know, supporting people to get into academia from practice, you know, and the supportive culture between people, enabling them to progress and take opportunities. I think it's within ourselves as well, there is this supportive ethos and of our colleagues. And I think that's something that you know, to be proud of in our sector. And it is the sort of career, well, if you think about the criminal justice system as this massive machine, you know, as forensic scientists, we're part of a cog in this massive machine. However, you need all those moving parts for the criminal justice system. So we come with our own expertise, but we're part of this amazing network. And you feel like you are contributing to something, and there's something about that feel-good factor that you're contributing to society. And I think that is really rewarding. You know, well, as much as any career has challenges, and some of the things you deal with might be really challenging, the fact is there is that sort of sense of reward, and that there's that ethos, isn't it, that you're contributing to the good.
Yeah, exactly. We've talked about this before, but like in forensic science, we have this kind of, it's almost like our core principle, and it has, you know, a name, Lockhart's principle, after, you know, one of the sort of founding fathers of forensic science. But it says that every contact leaves a trace, so that, you know, if someone goes to a crime scene, they're leaving small traces of themselves, that they were there, but potentially also, you know, taking something from the scene with them when they go as well. And we talk about that kind of in the context of our careers, how all the things that we've done have left, you know, a trace on us and shaped kind of where we've got to today.
Yeah. And I think as well, with you just finishing your PhD, and you know, you've got there, and that I'm hopefully gonna do that one day. But I think, you know, the fact is, who would have thought that we've worked in practice, we've in our PhD experiences, and you've got your trust project, we're now able to contribute to practice. You know, we're giving that back as well. And I just think that's brilliant that we've come full circle, and we didn't really envisage that when we started on our career journey. But the fact is, we're now contributing to new knowledge to help in a different way.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess it's interesting as well, because we both sort of come more from the kind of biology side of forensic science. So I suspect, and again, I haven't got actual data to back this up, but maybe in some of the other disciplines, things like digital forensics, which is really like a massive, you know, growth area, that maybe the gender balance isn't so equal there. Or, you know, both myself and Leisha said that we worked in, you know, laboratories, private or public sector, that were separate from the police force. But perhaps in some of our colleagues, like the crime scene examiners, they're actual, you know, they work for police organisations, the police forces. So there might be kind of different in different sectors, different kind of demographics, I guess. And it's not all like, you know, rosy. I'm sure, you know, there's still a gender pay gap. There's still, you wonder, you know, entry level, you know, there's probably pretty good representation of women, but you wonder sort of going into the leadership roles, whether that continues.
Like most like subject sectors, I think there's more we can do.
Yeah.
There are the people that have got to that pinnacle part, and you think, you know, they inspire us, but there's more that, you know, hopefully other people can aspire to that level as well. And that, you know, that's what we have quite a supportive ethos in, trying to encourage others to get into academia. But like Em said, you know, to go up to the, even when you think about in academia, the professor level and associate professor, I think there's more and more, there's been a change. The fact that, you know, previously to get into academia, you might have needed a PhD, but I think as practitioners, we're valued for what we bring. We always talk about, you know, the It's almost like a kaleidoscope of people, you know, that work in university. We all bring different gifts to the table and everyone's earned their seat at the table. And I think that's, you know, amazing. And I think we feel that here at our university, and hopefully others do as well where they are.
Yeah. And I think as well, you know, for kind of young people, and I guess particularly, you know, young women who might be thinking about going to study forensic science, that there is a, you know, I've heard lots of people say when we meet, you know, prospective parents on open days and that kind of thing, oh, but there's no jobs in forensic science, why would you want to go and study that? But I think that's a bit of a myth, because every year students do go and work in find forensic science jobs. But also as part of our program, sometimes feel like we're a little bit, it's almost like a little bit sneaky, like we lure people in with the forensic part, which people are generally interested in, it would seem. And then actually there is a lot of fundamental, it's biology, chemistry. So actually by the time that students have studied that, they're actually, you know, can go on to kind of, you know, a range of different kind of analytical science careers afterwards.
Exactly, because, you know, this, the skills that you're developing, that attention to detail, you know, problem solving, even working within a team and taking ownership of your own work, they're all really important skills that translate not just to forensic science, as Em said, but a whole raft of different careers. And it's about, you know, I always think whatever subject you go into, if you love it, you'll do really well. And that's what we try and say to people that we meet, you know, you'll know when you go to the university if it's the right fit for you and the course and the people. And I feel really honoured to work here alongside Em and the other members of our team, because it's honestly, it's a great place to be. And hopefully students and parents and supporters see that when they come to our open days, that, you know, the community that we have here.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, to be like, you know, a good forensic scientist, fundamentally you have to be like a good scientist, be really curious, you know, ask lots of questions, the sort of, you know, critical thinking and trying to, I guess, build your conclusions on data, which are just, you know, probably quite good skills for life more generally.
And being able to communicate to people, not just in written form, but, you know, being able to present and communicate in a verbal way as well, they're so important for lots of different subjects.
Yeah, and that's, yeah, probably one of the kind of slightly undervalued, or maybe like people don't really realise, like, but to be a good forensic scientist, that communication is absolutely crucial. Because if you're going to, you know, eventually if the case has, you know, goes to court and you're going to be standing up in a courtroom and helping the jury and the barristers, the judge, to understand the scientific evidence, it can be really sort of complex scientific you know, topics that you're having to convey in a way that, because you don't know that jury, they might not even have GCSE science or anything. So trying to communicate things in real, like, layperson's terms as well, that's really skill. But,
and also, I mean, when you think about it, that you're exposed to lots of challenging situations, you know, these are real life events impacting people. If anything, I think you see two polar opposites with the case, you know, details and what may have happened, given the nature of whatever offence it might be, you know, people are impacted. And sometimes you see possibly the worst of people, but then you also see the best of people, because you see the amazing people that you work alongside. And there's that too. And I think that's the, you know, the rewarding thing. That's what gets you through on those challenging days, particularly obviously talking about the caseworking environment. And so I think that's important if anyone's thinking about and considering going into the subject area, is you know, there is that supportive ethos of the team.
Yeah, and I think for me that's been some of the kind of like most rewarding moments in my work, is when I've really been able to see the impact of what I've done. Because often when I was working in the lab, you know, you might receive an item in the laboratory test, like a baseball cap or something that's been left at a crime scene, and we were trying to recover DNA from it. When you see that item, like the baseball cap, and you'd read the case file a little bit about what's happened, then you can sort of, it's tangible, it's something, and you can, you know, imagine a little bit what that baseball cap means beyond the walls of the lab. But after that, you've got, you know, clear stuff in a tube that is the DNA that you've recovered from that item, you're trying to extract it. It could almost be anything and doesn't somehow seem connected to the real world. So sometimes you could forget, I think, about, you know, the impact that your work might have. But for me, yeah, I remember like a case that I'd worked on, and I went to court and I met the victim, who was a taxi driver who'd been assaulted while he was working, and his cash taking had been stolen. And I can't remember exactly, I think the offenders had left something at the scene, and our DNA helped to identify the perpetrators, and they were brought to justice. And when the victim spoke about how terrified he'd been to go out to work, and actually the court case, you know, and thinking that this person had been caught, prosecuted for what they'd done, that brought him a lot of peace. So seeing that impact, and that my, you know, what my little piece of DNA evidence, what part that I'd played in the whole picture, was really rewarding. And similarly for me, the work that I did in Guatemala, it somehow seemed a lot closer, because we met like families of who were looking for their loved ones who'd gone missing through that time. It made it the connection, and to see the impact of what had happened a lot more real, I think.
Definitely. I think sometimes, like you were saying, when you're in the laboratory, it's almost sort of protected, because you don't, unless you get to go to court or in extreme circumstances, you don't get to see the people that are involved in the case, but in the way that police officers do and engage with them, or even if a crime scene investigator goes to investigate a burglary, for example, they might be having a conversation with the homeowner. So we don't always get to see that. And I always remembered hearing you talk about that, you know, the case with the taxi driver. I'll never forget. Maybe this is why I'm interested in trying to work, you know, in reducing knife crime. One of my examinations would be damage to clothing. And I remember I had this homicide case in the lab once. And I remember documenting all this damage to a piece of clothing. And the damage was from knives, where someone had, it was a homicide case, and the person had been injured through a kitchen knife, and repeatedly. And you know, and that really, I think it got to a point where I'd seen that so much, and in the cases that come through the lab, different cases. And I remember thinking, you know, where do you draw the line? Where, because a lot of our work is after the event, and maybe that's why I thought, actually, we can do a lot to try and prevent crime from happening. And that's what inspired me to apply for the Churchill Fellowship. And I was really honoured to go to Canada and Australia to see how they deal with knife crime cases, to try and help the UK. So I think there's a lot we can do to learn from each other. Like, and went to Guatemala, you know, learning from our colleagues in other countries and sharing that knowledge, and trying to, you know, crime's evolving when you look at fraud and people trafficking, and that goes into Em's PhD, you know, all the challenges that are out there. But we still, you know, we're still developing new techniques and processes to try and communicate what we do, to inform the public so that they can rely on what we do, but also to, you know, we are responding to crime and helping to detect it. So it's, you feel like you're part of something.
Yeah, and I was just thinking, actually, then as we were speaking, and given like the topic, what we're talking about, like women in forensic science, it's really interesting, actually, on some of the cases that I've worked on, that kind of on the more missing person side of things. So, you know, in Guatemala, this was like, you know, a post-conflict context, and obviously lots of people go missing during migration as well. A lot of the time, you know, it's the men who have been killed during the conflict or have gone missing in the times of migration. And then that means that often it's the women who are left behind. And kind of, you know, in the whole history of forensic science, some really key women were, you know, in Latin America, in Argentina, they were the ones who were really advocating and really, you know, to begin the whole process of the forensic exhumations and to try and find out answers of what had happened to their family. So in those contexts, they were really like driving the whole process, which was kind of interesting. And just a sort of something that kind of like occurred to me as we were speaking, if we want this kind of women angle on it, that, you know, yeah, sometimes they're the ones, I guess, driving the whole process, which is really cool.
I definitely think that without one of the winners in forensic science, a lady called Margaret Pereira, I wouldn't have got into forensic science. And she was one of the first women to work in forensic science in the UK and to, you know, manage one of the laboratories. And I'll never forget working on one of her cases. It was a cold case review, and, you know, thinking that she was one of the first. And, you know, thanks to her, that led to change and encouraged other people to go into the service. So I think, you know, it's a legacy, isn't it, that those people were the first, and they enabled, made it a little bit easier for other people to go in. And hopefully, you know, with your project and the Trust Project, you'll inspire other people to do that.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, do you think...
Hopefully everyone liked our conversation. And
yeah, and I think we're both really open. If anyone is interested, you know, we're both on LinkedIn, or you can probably find us through quite a quick Google search with, you know, at De Montfort University, and we'd be happy to chat to anyone, or if people have got questions, to just get in touch.
Thank you.
You have been listening to the INCJ podcast, conversations about international criminal justice. To find out more, go to our website at criminaljusticenetwork.net or follow us on Twitter at INTCJ Network.